Hi there, this is Ross Conrad, and I'll be reading to you my article from the April 2023 edition of Bee Culture magazine, entitled Tropolalapse. Is this mite really going to be worse than Varroa? Well, the answer is yes and no. Our experience with Varroa has shown how much of a challenge dealing with mites can be. Trying to identify miticides that will not contaminate honey and wax, dealing with mites that develop resistance to our most toxic chemicals, relying on treatments that don't always work due to weather or temperature issues. The list is long. This is part of the reason that scientists and others have long issued dire warnings should the Tropolalapse mite ever make its way to European and American shores. So far, Tropolalapse's territory has been limited to its native Asia and bordering areas, and four distinct species of Tropolalapse have been identified to date. Tropolalapse caria and Mercedesae are considered to be the most economically important of the four, since they are the primary mites that have jumped from their native giant honeybee hosts to the western honeybee. Like Varroa destructor, which is also indigenous to Asia, mature Tropolalapse mites are a reddish-brown color, and although the mite is smaller in size, about a third of the size of a Varroa mite, the life cycle of Tropolalapse is similar to that of Varroa. Adult female mites enter cells containing older larvae, are sealed in the cells when the workers cap the brood, and they produce offspring that feed on the developing honeybee pupa. Like honeybees, fertilized eggs develop into female mites and unfertilized eggs produce males. Just like with Varroa, the female offspring of a single Tropolalapse mite are able to mate with their brothers and initiate an infestation. Tropolalapse moves much quicker than Varroa, reproduces faster than Varroa, laying eggs in quicker succession, and has a much shorter phoretic stage where the mite exists on the outside of the brood cell. While Varroa are known to create a single wound and repeatedly visit the site to feed, Tropolalapse mites create multiple small wounds from which they feed. Unfortunately, just like Varroa, Tropolalapse is known to vector honeybee viruses, such as the deformed wing virus. Tropolalapse can also spread within a colony, between colonies in the same apiary, and among apiaries, by hitching a ride on robbing workers or drifting drones. Tropolalapse happen to have one severe weakness. The mites are not able to easily feed on mature bees, apparently due to the inability of their mouthparts to pierce the hard cuticle layer of adults. Unlike Varroa mites, Tropolalapse do not appear to have learned how to wedge themselves in between the plate-like segments of the abdomen in order to access the soft tissue there and feed on the honeybee's fat body. While there are some soft areas on an adult bee that a mite could take advantage of, such as at the base of the wings, it is unusual to find Tropolalapse feeding on adult honeybees. Tropolalapse primarily feed on the soft-bodied larva and pupa and must do so regularly, or they will die after about 2 to 3 days. Without a constant supply of larvae and pupa, Tropolalapse is unable to maintain its rapid reproduction rate and stay alive. This means that in northern climates, where honeybees experience a natural period of prolonged brood interruption due to the dearth of winter, a brood break that is known to severely reduce Varroa populations can also be expected to impact Tropolalapse in a similar manner. However, the mite's ability to survive in the temperate regions of South Korea and northern China suggests that a minority of mites, perhaps about 15%, are able to somehow adapt to such broodless periods. This may help give northern beekeepers a bit of an edge in dealing with Tropolalapse compared to southern beekeepers, whose colonies are unlikely to stop all brood production during the season unless exposed to drought conditions. This also means that swarming, which is known to reduce Varroa populations in colonies, can also be expected to reduce Tropolalapse populations. Also, starting a colony without brood, such as through a package of bees, is a great way to ensure a colony is Tropolalapse-free, at least during its initial startup phase. Another reason to think that Tropolelaps will not be a major catastrophe for American beekeepers should the mite arrive in North America is by observing the experience of Chinese beekeepers, who have been dealing with Tropolelaps for decades and continue to be the largest producer of honey in the world. Chinese beekeepers are reportedly able to control Tropolelaps with sublimated sulfur. Additionally, there is evidence that many of the presently approved Varroa treatments available in the U.S. are also effective against Tropolelaps. Current approved Varroa mite treatments that have been shown to also reduce Tropolelaps infestations include formic acid fumigation, Amitraz and fluvalinate, Hopguard and MiteAway quick strips, and a combination of formic acid and thymol. As in the case of Varroa-sensitive hygiene, where bees are able to detect when Varroa are feeding on capped brood, worker bees appear able to detect brood cells parasitized by Tropolelaps and have been known to uncap and remove infested brood and their mites. As mentioned above, Tropolelaps mites need larvae and pupa to feed on, or they will die after 2 to 3 days. This suggests that biomechanical controls, such as caging the queen in order to periodically deprive the colony of brood, is a method that beekeepers could use should they not wish to use pesticides on their colonies in order to keep Tropolelaps mites under control. Another easy way to take advantage of this Achilles heel is to simply divide the colony, moving all brood combs and adhering bees into a new box and leaving the queen and broodless combs and bees in the original hive. The queenless colony will begin rearing a new queen, but the resulting interruption in brood production will kill off all the Tropolelaps mites. Meanwhile, the mites will also all die out in the queen right half of the hive, since there will be no brood to feed on, and it will be approximately 3 days before any new eggs that the queen lays can hatch and form larvae that the mites need for food. If this process is carried out at the end of the nectar flow, no honey production need be sacrificed, and hive populations can be maintained by recombining the colonies. Due to their short phoretic phase, traditional Varroa detection methods, such as the sugar shake or alcohol wash, are ineffective in detecting Tropolelaps. Instead, beekeepers will have to rely upon brood uncapping, bump testing, sticky board inspections, and a thorough colony inspection. Telltale signs of Tropolelaps infestation are irregular brood patterns and perforated brood cappings caused by the sanitary behavior of the bees. Similar to hives infested heavily with Varroa, adults in colonies heavily infested by Tropolelaps are likely to have stunted abdomens, deformed wings, and exhibit the symptoms of parasitic mite syndrome. It is also commonly reported that heavily infested colonies will abscond from their hive, creating a natural brood break and eliminating their Tropolelaps infestation. When Varroa first arrived, American beekeepers didn't know much about the mite's biology, and we didn't have any approved treatments available. We were basically starting from square one. With Tropolelaps, things are much different, and therefore, should the mite appear in American bee yards, there's every reason to expect a much less destructive and disruptive experience for most beekeepers. Good news is not easy to come by these days, so we should take it wherever we can find it. This is Ross Conrad, and thank you for listening.